The recording has been started. You may now proceed.
Be seated, please. So this still seems to be a little bit hard. Okay, can we get the recording started? It is started, that's awesome. So welcome back to the afternoon session and welcome to the remote participants. This is Thomas Rickert for the record. And we would like to continue our conversation by moving to the next community power, which is the community power on approving bylaw changes. And Jordan is going to help us with that and is going to introduce the topic. And then we're going to move to discussion.
I do. Thank you. Just while we're waiting for this to appear, this is the bylaws change power. I'll try and find it as well and start talking about it. 1A, community approves bylaw changes. So I'm going to start talking anyway. What we've got is a proposal to give the community power to block a change to the ICANN bylaws. And through whatever means we organize it, constitute it, the basic is that the board proposes a bylaws change. The community can say, nope, go back and look at it again. There we go. And this is a nice short two-page template, and what I've said summarizes it entirely. Good. I can't see my own mouse. Quite seriously, one of the things that hasn't been specified in these is who would trigger this action. And so we do need to define that. But I think that with all of these powers, like the budget power and so on, the general idea has been that if an SO or an AC raised it to the mechanism's attention, it would go into consideration and then a call for a decision would arise. It helps keep the board accountable because it means that there's a check and balance on the board's ability to make bylaws changes. It raises the threshold, if you like, for the board to be considering and incorporating the community's views before it goes ahead and formally proposes a bylaw change. The rest of the material, if you scroll down on this, is this set up, Adam, so that only you can scroll, or is it everyone can scroll? Right, so if you've all got scroll control, you'll be able to recognize much of the content from the previous power on the budget. Most of those comments are the same. So I don't think that there's any need to take up any additional time in trying to explain it. It's very brief and very simple. He was suggesting that we just look at the standard of review in the template, which is on the first page, second half of the first page. And once again, the language there, some of the bylaws, which would include the values that we talked about this morning, public interest, stakeholders' interests, and applicable California law, that's something to be aware of. Other than drawing your attention specifically to that, I think we'd just take any comments, co-chairs, if that's...
Raise his hand, so James, please.
Hi, thanks. Just a quick question, and apologize for injecting some complexity into what should be the easy one. But if all of these structures and mechanisms that we're talking about result in bylaw changes, I think it's important that we get this one right. That's kind of our last line of defense against everything else. So my question is, why wouldn't we consider taking this a step further and instead of blocking proposed bylaw changes from the board, why even examine why bylaw changes are originating from the board in the first place? And perhaps even expanding upon that and saying, you know, that there's a process for bylaws changes and that they may end up at the board for final approval, but that they follow some sort of a more bottom-up process from other areas of the organization. Or it's possible that I missed that call, that we already had that discussion.
No, but I guess your point is a very good one, James. It's almost similar to how I can craft a budget and present it to the board for approval. I think many of the things that we have on the table are already discussed between the community and ICANN staff and the board, right? So I think it's quite unlikely for the ICANN board to come up with the bylaw change entirely in isolation without having a triggering moment from the community. And this...
That's true, and I would agree that should be how it is, but I think there was recently a proposal to change, for example, the way that they process GAC advice, that a lot of folks, I think, were caught off guard and didn't know where that originated, where that particular proposal had originated from. So I think blocking proposals is a good idea and certainly an important mechanism, but just taking that a step further, why are people still being surprised by proposed changes to the bylaws that seem to be originating either from the board or from board and staff?
Ideally, there wouldn't be any surprises because there's a consultation process before. And I think, you know, since we had this point with the budget earlier, and since you're bringing it up now, I think in our recommendations and in the report, we should make very clear that these mechanisms are meant to be last resort mechanisms in case the consultation process between the community and the board has failed for whatever reason, right? And that these should be used and hopefully improved so that hopefully these mechanisms will never be, or these powers will never be exercised. So I think the point is well noted. I think nonetheless we have to work on the community empowerment in that regard, but we will make sure that something along these lines goes into the report. Does that address the concern? Chris is saying.
Thank you. So I think this is actually... In my head, this was relatively simple and straightforward. Less of an issue than the budget one, not least because of timing, because you don't have any set times for these things, generally speaking. But picking up on James's point, the sort of circumstance where I had envisaged this would obviously, if the board arbitrarily decided to change the bylaws, then that is something that this would fall into. But generally speaking, the way that I'd seen it was it would follow through the normal process. And if you take the GAC change of the way that GAC advice was dealt with, that did actually follow through the normal process. It may have appeared to have come from the board originally. Actually, it didn't. It came from the joint GAC board working group. But nonetheless, it went out for public comment, consideration, and so on. So my view is that where this would work is that you've gotten through that whole process. There's been public comment. And for some reason, the community doesn't believe that the public comment's being taken into account. Gosh. That's very exciting. The public comment hasn't been taken into account. The board has ridden roughshod over the community's concerns, or the board has pulled from a hat a sudden legal requirement that says we must make this change irrespective of what you think, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in those circumstances, I think it's perfectly sensible that the community would have the opportunity to veto.
Steve, because he was even before Chris in the queue. Go on.
Thank you, Steve Del Bianco. Chris is right about the circumstances that he described, but there was another set of circumstances we anticipated the need for this power. So many of the changes we're going to do to empower the community are going to be bylaws changes. Becky went through a handful this morning. We just covered the one about being able to block a budget. We have many more to cover, affirmation of commitments reviews. So suppose through work stream one, we get all these changes to the bylaws, and then a new board in 2 years tries to walk those powers back. One of the ways we secure these powers so that they can't be given up without the community's consent is the ability to block a bylaws change. So there is much to secure and retain our community powers as they are to block a sort of a rogue bylaws amendment that the board or general counsel are trying to push through. Those are different. I also pointed out the standard of review on this one, Jordan. This template leads one to believe that the standard of review has to be strictly applied by someone. But it's my understanding the way this is designed is that the community, if we've adopted the supermajority vote to block a bylaws change, we may have considerations that we based our decision on, and what you've listed there are the considerations. But by no means are they standard of review, because the community's vote isn't subject to a third-party review. So it might be better to change that heading, both in the last one we did and this one, to simply say the considerations for the community voting. But they're not a standard of review, not the way we're going to be discussing it when Becky walks us through the independent review panel later on.
Thanks, Steve. And maybe it's worthwhile asking Jordan, before we move on in the queue, we have approve or block. So I think we should decide which one we're actually talking about.
Yeah, my personal approach as rapporteur has been to encourage people down the block route, because the proposed route is the board's job. The approval is the board's job. We're talking about the creation of a set of reserve powers, not trying to create two boards, not trying to create an ungovernable organization. So I think, and Steve, your point relates to the frailties of this template when applied to powers. So if we're going to, as we go forward in representing this work, we will find ways to display it that don't create these crossovers between different purposes. This template has served us well so far, but we'll need to move on from it.
Okay, so the understanding that we're talking about a blocking mechanism, and should there be any objections to us proceeding on that basis, please make yourself heard. Next in line is Marcus, I think, isn't it? Yes, Marcus.
Yes, thank you. Marcus speaking for the record. Just building on what James and Chris have said, and what Jordan just said about the approval, I just wonder whether we could not, in a way, turn it around and say strengthening community involvement in bylaws changes with the ultimate possibility of blocking the bylaws. The same way as the discussion on the budget, we do have existing processes where the community is involved, and strengthening these processes with giving as an ultimate resort the possibility of blocking would be my way of looking at it, rather the positive way of strengthening community involvement in designing bylaws, but giving the community the option of blocking if they feel that their voice has not been heard.
Thanks, Marcus. Ellen.
Thank you. I originally put my hand up in response to James, and he asked sort of why don't all bylaw changes come from the community? And my original answer, I think, was there's probably parts of the bylaws where the community is not really structured to make changes. The ones we're talking about in this group, if this group had not been explicitly formed, there's not a lot of places in ICANN where a change in the core mission or something like that would likely occur, even if it was warranted. So certainly there are things in the bylaws which may not all be driven by the community. But more important, right now for the budget, for instance, we do have a process by which the community is consulted. It's not in the bylaws that they have to. That's simply the people have decided to. If you look at the bylaw on amendment of bylaws, it says the board may, with a two-thirds majority, may change the bylaws. They don't have to give advance notice to the community. They don't have to put it out for public comment. They don't even have to announce it in the agenda ahead of time. It can just be done and announced as a fait accompli. Guess what we did, guys? So we probably want to look at that and perhaps change those rules as well, that they must do some consultation. Maybe there's some legal reasons why they need to do things on an emergency without consultation. I don't know. But certainly right now there is no escape hatch, and there's a good reason for us putting this in.
Implementing our recommendations, lawyers will have a look at the whole set of documents and make it a cohesive approach. At least that would be my hope.
Changing the bylaw, which says there should be consultation, is very different from what we're doing here. So I'm not sure the lawyers would automatically make it cohesive like that. So it's something I think we may want to think about.
Okay, the point is noted. So we can move to Becky then.
Thank you. Becky Burr for the record. I just want to, in furtherance of what Chris was saying in response to James, just remind people that we actually did have a very real experience with a bylaws change that took the community and, as it turned out, some members of the board by surprise, which was the change in the standard for independent review that was introduced at a time that the ICANN community was extremely busy. The only stakeholder group that commented on it was the registry stakeholder group, and they commented saying that it was not ready for prime time. The process continued, and the board ended up approving the bylaws change on the consent calendar, some members of the board were surprised when we started talking to them about what the substance of the change had been. So it's not necessarily that there's bad stuff going on, but simply the what's happening hasn't come to the attention of the community in an effective way, and it has significance to the community. So I think this is a very valuable remedy.
Jordan is next.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. This has been a helpful set of inputs. I'm pleased that no one suggested we shouldn't have this power, so I guess there's a bit of a consensus in the room about it being a useful one. I just wanted to restate the point about it being a veto, because that's something that is important to stick to if we can consistently across these. And I also want to raise the point that isn't in the template about how would this process start? How would anyone initiate the idea of vetoing a bylaw change? And common with the budget one, I think it's 1SO or AC formally raising it sort of starts the process of considering that and asking people to make a decision. The only other threshold that we've proposed in this work is 2 SOs or ACs, and that's in respect of removing the ICANN board of directors. But there's time still, of course, to think about these things. So that's kind of, in my head anyway, where that threshold is sitting at the moment to start this process happening.
Can we... I thought there was an... Oh, then Steve.
Thank you. There's another threshold question in here, which is the supermajority versus majority. And if Cavus were here, he would want to know right away, does supermajority mean two-thirds, three-quarters, or four-fifths? And I'm not suggesting we have to solve that right now. I honestly believe that the appropriate level of majority can be done on a comparative basis. Like, we'll take a look at the power to block a budget. What should that require? Now compare that to the power to block a bylaws change. Oh, maybe that should be a different supermajority. Spill the board could be a different one. And as we move to that next power of spill the board, we'll probably get into a deep discussion of what the appropriate majority has to be. And then we'll walk it back to these two lesser powers and see what the appropriate application is. So I note that supermajority is undefined. We haven't indicated whether all ACs and SOs must vote, or can they just abstain? And if they a bunch of them abstain, well, then how do you get to a supermajority without that? So there are some considerations on what constitutes the right quorum and what constitutes supermajority. Let's note them and come back later when you compare all these powers, perhaps in a single table. This morning you did a table comparing the mechanisms or structures, and we ought to do a similar one with these four powers.
Chris?
Thanks. I agree with Steve. Just in the spirit of sort of cooperation, I just want to raise one point. We're talking about voting on stuff. Is the working group reaching out to the GAC at all about their involvement in these sorts of processes? Because there's a challenge here. The ALAC and the Cs and the Gs are used to mechanisms where they vote, etc. But that doesn't apply to the GAC. And I think if we're going to be creating something that relies upon a series of mechanisms that involve voting, we need to be very clear on our percentages. Because if we assume the GAC won't vote, then that takes them out of the frame. If we assume that they continue to operate on their GAC advice principle, which is that they can provide advice and the board is not bound to accept that advice, but there is a whole process which takes about 6 months by which the board cannot accept that advice. So if you didn't have GAC buy into these processes and they simply produced a piece of advice, you know, at the end of the process that says, we don't agree, the board would then be in a position under the current structure, and I don't see any intention to change that, where they would effectively have to go into a six-month process to deal with the GAC.
I think, Chris, you're mentioning an excellent point. Let me respond with two answers. First of which, on this specific point, we haven't reached out to the GAC. On a more general note, and this goes for all the chartering organizations, we have members from the respective groups there, and it is my understanding that it's the role of the members to liaise with their respective groups to check feasibility. And so far, we are aware of the concern, but we have not received any feedback as to changes required to our approach because of the way how chartering organizations operate. So would you like to add to that? So Steve would like to comment.
We have had GAC members on Work Party 1 on the calls with us. I mentioned Caboose earlier. And we are conscious of the fact that the GAC may or may not be able to vote. We want to err on the side of welcoming the GAC's vote when and if it can, right? It can be completely open to the ability for that to be there, but not demand it, and perhaps not even expect it, but to welcome it. And therefore, if it happens, great, and if it doesn't, we just need to make sure it doesn't kill our ability to get a quorum necessary for a supermajority requirement. And that could be the case, Chris, even if it weren't the GAC who was unable to vote. It might just be another group. The SSAC might say, you know, I don't really care about this one. And they may sit it out. And when that happens, what's the new supermajority threshold?
Thanks, Steve. Jordan?
I think that comment, Steve, is not deliberately, I'm sure, an argument in favor of some kind of way of exercising these powers that brings people together for a conversation. Because even if people don't vote, they might usefully share a perspective from the groups that they're from that will help inform everyone else's decision-making when they are casting votes. The last point I wanted to make, just as we get into our next power, there are always temptations, right, which we start off with James, to expand our work beyond improving ICANN's accountability to improving ICANN. And so I'm noting the things down that are improving ICANN, like a better budget process or more involvement for this. Yeah, but when we come back to that stuff, it'll need to be work stream two, or even the CCWG on making ICANN awesome or something, but not necessarily us.
Thanks, Jordan.
Sorry, I've fallen out of the Adobe Connect, so it was not possible. just a remark, since nobody else from the GAC reacted to the discussion that we just had.
You know that we have decided to undergo a revision of our operating principles, and that may include discussions on having us giving us, ourselves the right to vote and so on and so forth. That may take some time, such a process. The thing is that whether the GAC will be wanting to vote or not, I think we should make sure that the GAC is involved in these decisions in whatever way is considered to be appropriate by the GAC, but also by the rest of the community. And I think we can't go much further than this for the time being, but as long as it's noted that the GAC should be involved in the appropriate manner, and then time will tell what that is going to be. I think that is as far as we can go, but I would take it as an agreement that the GAC should be involved. Is that right? Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Okay, before we move to the next power, let me check a few things with the group. Is there any objection to the need for this empowerment? We want to keep it, right? We want to keep it. So I also send support for the notion that we want to vote on this, right? So it's going to be a voting-based mechanism, and please make yourself heard. Make yourself heard in case you object to that. The one, I think, the idea that that Steve brought up is an excellent one, that we should talk about Quora, talk about voting thresholds, define supermajority, absentees, and stuff like that. But I think one specific area we haven't yet touched upon, and that is the mission creep contingency, because if I can choose to become a registrar, and if that were, let's say, built into the bylaws, and the community was just too sleepy, so that nobody, no SO or SE would trigger this blocking mechanism, you know, is this something that we've sufficiently considered, or do we at least want to have a placeholder for the mission in the bylaws being a golden bylaw that would require different treatment? Steve?
I think you'll be best served to wait until the independent review panel discussion, because that power where the community has standing looks to the mission and values that we discussed this morning, which have in them tight limitations on ICANN scope creep. So if a board decision were made, even not a bylaw change, Thomas, but any decision to suddenly become a registrar, that decision then becomes subject to an IRP that looks to the bylaws to block it on the basis of a standard of review that says it's outside of their scope.
But that would be after the fact. And that's the difference in mechanism.
I have an additional concern, Steve, which maybe I'm not clear on something, but the standard of review on whether there's mission creep is the bylaws. So if the independent panel is to decide upon a change of the bylaws, that's not within its scope to actually discuss this. Well, if the mission creep we're seeing is starting with a proposal to change the bylaws to extend ICANN's mission, that's what we've been discussing this morning. I can't see an independent panel challenging this. How does that work?
Yeah. If, in fact, there was a bylaws proposal that came through, and we have the opportunity to block a bylaws, we have practically consensus about that, the ability to block a bylaws change. What I thought Thomas was bringing up is a non-bylaws or some other means by which the scope was expanding. And you're right, we would have to capture it after the fact by challenging through reconsideration or an IRP. There's also a discussion of a community power called a community veto, which doesn't even involve having a third party look at it. I'm not sure that we'll get to that today. It might be something that gets on the agenda for tomorrow. But a community veto wouldn't have to necessarily be standards-based. The community could just say, this is something we shouldn't be doing. We want to reconsider or block the decision. So the scope limitation is something that, since we are going to bake it in to the mission and core values with a tight balancing test, then any community power that looks to that piece of the bylaws is able to limit scope.
Yes, but I was specifically referring to bylaw changes that would affect the mandate.
Yes.
And if the ICANN board, without consultation with the community, did that bylaw change, and if the community was sleepy enough not to invoke this blocking procedure, then it would go through, and then the only recourse that we would have would be independent review.
And we'd look to the bylaws, so we would move on. Yeah.
So,
we deserve what we get.
We have a queue, so we... Let's go to Paul now.
Following up on your question, I think that your description is accurate. If a bylaw is changed to expand the mission, then the independent review panel cannot... its standard of review, at least as I anticipate we will define it, is the bylaws themselves.
Yes.
If the community is asleep at the switch and does not exercise its blocking power, then, you know, shame on the community. That's one thing. I would add to your discussion the following question. Do we want to prohibit changing the mission? Period, full stop. Such that then the independent review panel would have jurisdiction because the change would be extra legal in its action. If the bylaws, they say, these bylaws shall never be changed except by unanimous vote, or except by unanimous vote plus community approval, or never ever, period, full stop, then the independent review panel has a justiciable standard to judge. And I would offer that as a consideration for cabining the possibility of rogue expansion of the mission.
Thanks. Thanks, Paul. Alan is next.
Thank you. This actually addresses the previous discussion. Is it imagined that this is something the community must invoke, or that any new bylaw only becomes into effect post approval of the community? Because if
The proposal on the table that was described by Jordan is that we would have a blocking mechanism whereby one SO or AC can invoke the process.
Okay. I'm questioning whether that is what we should be doing then, because as just noted, if the board changes the bylaws, then the bylaws are changed immediately, typically, and they may be changing the terms under which we can block things.
This is why I was doing the test with this specific example. I think we can have something like a golden bylaw that gets special treatment. You know, we could have a blocking mechanism for everything other than golden bylaws, and then have a special approval process for golden bylaws. But let's follow the queue, and Chris is next.
Thanks. So, someone's just said it really, if the community is asleep, I can't imagine that such a thing would ever happen. But someone will be awake. But if the community is asleep at the wheel, I mean, to some extent, so be it. But the way to solve the problem, I would have thought, is to, very simply, to have the veto as envisaged by this document, plus a simple requirement that ensures that all bylaw changes go through the community consultation process that is used for everything else. It's not hard to do. I don't think we need to do anything other than that. So simply check, make sure that any bylaw changes have to go through the process. Now, if the counter argument to that is yes, but that's not going to stop the board. The board could technically still change the bylaws without telling anybody. Well, then they'd be in breach of the process, wouldn't they? And that would then be subject to reconsideration and IRP.
This is tying ourselves in knots for absolutely no reason. There are going to have to be parts of the bylaws that are entrenched or made golden or whatever as part of building a durable accountability settlement. And we'll be stress testing these to within an inch of their lives. We don't need to worry about this problem. It isn't one. Shall we move on to the next power?
Alan, do you pass or your hand is still up? You can pass.
I'm perfectly okay. I'm dubious, but I won't exercise the opportunity to delay the process right now. But I have strong concerns with what you just said, but let's handle it offline.
It's fundamental to the whole work that we're doing. So,
you rebut, I'm going to have to rebut. Let's handle it offline.
Okay, but the good thing is that I think we have some sort of guidance from the group which direction this is going to take, and then we await the table, the comparison table for the power. Mm-hmm. Shall we then move to the next community power on spilling the board? And again, Jordan, if you could kindly introduce the topic to us.
Okay. We're going to go through this template that's on the board, not the table that's at the top, but the first. Can we be given, all of us be given editing control of this, Adam? So at the moment, don't pay attention to the table. Scroll down until you get to the first set of templates. It's option one, isn't it, Malcolm, is the one that's closest to the original. Is it? So to be clear about the core characteristics of what's been proposed here, we're talking about removing the whole ICANN board of directors. We're not talking about a recall mechanism for a particular director appointed by an SOAC. So if we need to develop a power to do that as part of Workstream 1, we can. The group's been edging towards thinking that might be a Workstream 2 thing, but there's nothing to stop us implementing that individual director recall power after the transition. This is removing the whole ICANN board of directors. The threshold that we've set out for this, if you scroll down to the bottom of the first page of that template, so in the document it's page 4, we've proposed that this one needs a higher threshold to start this process happening, either two SOs or two ACs or one SO and AC sort of formally starting this process. And that's because of the seriousness with which this should be dealt. Now, we're going to come back to some variations about that after I've gone through the basics so that you understand this template. But that's a higher threshold to trigger it. The point, if you keep scrolling down to the standard of review, we have proposed one. There is one argument that says that doing something like removing a board doesn't relate to any formal standards. It's when the community has lost confidence, so you don't need to say why. We proposed some words there that where the actions of ICANN through an action or inaction by the board are inconsistent with the obligations set out in the bylaws. Community compact was some old language that referred to what we were discussing this morning, to the mission, the values, and so on. Now we can ignore the mechanism stuff here, because it is things that we've talking about later, if you like. So if you keep scrolling down to on this PDF, page 9. In terms of the decision making, I think it is worth just thinking about this. We have two options sitting here in this template, just to get you thinking. One of them is that people should be, if we choose a community council or whatever model, the individuals sitting on it are empowered to make the decision. But that to do that, they have to participate first in a meeting of their SO or AC, where this is the subject of discussion. So they're still making the decision, but we're forcing them procedurally to go away and talk about it in a convened meeting of the GAC or of the CCNSO or whatever, to force there to be an interaction and consideration of this serious power. The other option is that they would be able to, the SOs and ACs, be able to direct how their people vote as a matter of procedure. So it actually would be required to do so. It wouldn't be down to the SO and AC choosing it. And that was just to give two options of how that could look. If you scroll a little bit further down, we did do some thinking about the majority threshold for this. And the particular numbers there relate to the number of people on the decision-making body. And what we said was that no one SO or AC should be able to block the removal of the board. But that if one SO or AC was totally opposed, then everyone else voting would have to vote in favor for the spill to happen. So that's, we didn't want to make it possible for one SO and AC to block, but we did want to keep the highest possible threshold below that. So that without looking at the direct numbers, that's the important thought to keep in mind. You could structure this so it had to be unanimous. That would be a different option. But if you did that, then the ICANN board would only have to keep one SO or AC just happy enough with it, and they would know they could always... Which, of course, you would, did you say, Chris? Yeah, well, anyone normal would, so... Exactly. And those are the key elements, except to say that if you scroll down to the bottom, so the bottom of page 10 in this, right down at the end of the template, you can't have a company without a board. So if you're going to remove the ICANN board, you have to think through what that means. You have to have a caretaker mechanism in place. And the one that we just started to sketch out was, first of all, you don't want this removing the board thing to fire the CEO. Because if you don't have a board in place, you don't want to not have a board in place and not have a CEO in place. That would be decapitating the organization. So what we had suggested was that their employment arrangements had to keep them in the CEO's office, even if they're removed as the president of the board. And that there needs to be a caretaker convention where after this decision is made by the community, a period of time is allowed for appointments or elections or re-elections of directors, and that in that period of time, the company can't do anything. It's got to be in this caretaker mode. The board can't make any new decisions. It can continue the operations. And that at a period of time that we need to define, any directors remaining that hadn't been reappointed or replaced would be deemed to have resigned and so would fall off the board at that point. You need to just get that balance right so that it's practical. And as part of that, we wondered whether there should be a quick trigger process for SOs and ACs who wanted to reappoint their directors. If, for example, the CCNSO was very happy with Chris Despain and he was on the ICANN board when this happened, should they be able, just hypothetically, should they be able to just quickly resolve the issue by reappointing him? That's something to tease out. So that's the kind of basics here with this power. If we scroll right back up to the top of the template, there's another little table here in black and gray and light gray. And it talks about some variations on this theme. The Strawman 2 one makes it slightly easier to trigger this process of deciding whether to fire the board or not. And the third straw man changes it from kind of a vote of no confidence to a vote of confidence, if you like. It says that if any SO or AC loses confidence in the board, then the whole board should go. So these are variations on the theme, and there's explanation of that in the template, which I am absolutely confident you've all read very carefully more than once. And I think that's all the explanatory comments I should make at this point. Thanks.
Chris, I think your hand is still raised, right?
Yes. Thank you, Jordan. Excellent work. Couple of points. My personal opinion would be in favour of not having a committee vote individually. I think this is the top of the tree. Really, this should be mandated votes of the SOs and ACs. But I wonder, did you consider the possibility of, rather than having a committee, actually simply just using the SOs and ACs? In other words, triggering the mechanism by whatever process we agree it needs to be triggered, and then having a bylaw written that then mandates that each SO and AC must go through their process and produce a decision by whatever their voting thresholds are within their SO and AC. So I'm just suggesting that is another possibility, and I don't know if you considered it or not. In respect to the replacement board, may I suggest that it would probably be best, before wasting too much more energy on that we simply ask the lawyers for legal advice on that. There are mechanisms in place. There will be Californian law relevant to, not so much to ICANN specifically, but to organizations where there is the power for people to vote the board off. So there'll be stuff there that can help us with that, and there'll probably be requirements for existing board members to stay in a caretaker capacity, etc. And one final point. I agree that I think
the concept of having a threshold that allows for one SO and AC to not be in favor is okay. But I say that based on my previously stated principle that I think it should be the SOs and ACs that make the decision, whether it's they empower a committee member to vote or there is no committee and it's the SOs and ACs themselves. But I think that would be fine if you had all of them voting in favour and one, except for one, that would be okay.
Just before we go down the list, could I ask you a clarifying question, Chris? One of the underpinning notions in these mechanisms is that of dialogue across the constituencies. You're proposing, you asked, did we think about having each SO and AC make the decision in this roll the board process?
Yes.
Do you think that the more important the decision is, the less important it is to have cross-community dialogue? Could you just tease that side of this out?
No, I don't. I think you make an extremely good point. In my head, what I see is that there would be cross-community discussion, but that the vote would occur in each of the SOs and ACs by whatever mechanism it is that they use to do that. I'm not suggesting that it should be done in silo, in that the CCs should only talk to themselves. I'm suggesting a process should be created that allows them all to talk amongst themselves. And I have no issue with the committee at all, as long as it's a mandated voting rather than them making the decision. Because my opinion is, if you do that, if you actually say the committee itself can vote, then you'd have to build a mechanism by which an SO or AC that disagrees with the way the committee has voted has some redress in order for it to be really, truly community-based. Otherwise, what you're doing is you're saying you've got these individuals who, I'm assuming this would be a standing, this would be a committee already standing, right, your community council. So I might have put people on that, CCNSO might have put people on that committee for all sorts of different reasons. It's starting to get very, very complicated in my mind, whereas if you create a process specifically to deal with this that is cross-community but ends up with a vote in the SOs and ACs, I think that solves the problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Good comments. We have to get back to the SO and AC question anyway. After this panel, we're going to discuss who makes the community. You know, for example, could the IETF, if they wanted to, trigger the process, which they couldn't if we're just doing it as an OAC basis. So we're going to come to the power question after discussing the splitting the board issue. James is next in the queue.
Thanks, Thomas. Something that I wanted to ask, and I think Chris perhaps touched on it, was, or even going back to a previous speaker, was... What is the minimum board size and composition required under California law in order to be a continuing entity? I think that maybe that's something that we can understand. And if we understand that that's, for example, let's say three seats plus ex officio for the CEO, then maybe you have that caretaker board, positioned in advance before you spill the board, and I think that eliminates the need to have that convention that you were discussing to repopulate the board, or at least to take some of the time pressure off. And then the second question is, it sounds like in any of these scenarios there's nothing preventing each SO or AC or group from just recertifying or redelegating the board member that was just removed from office back up to the board, and that the board looks exactly the same as it did prior to the invocation of this mechanism. And the reason I raise that is the possibility is, and we have this weird phenomenon in the U.S. where everybody hates Congress, but everybody loves their congressman. And I just would wonder how that would play out, in terms of this mechanism.
Legal support both in the room as well as participating remotely, so maybe somebody would like to volunteer to inform the group about that. And this was not to intentionally suppress your views, Malcolm. Sorry for for not going to you before I went to James. So it's your turn.
Thank you. And actually, that last point is addressed in one of the subsidiary questions further down in there. It's raised the question of, for example, should directors who have served on a board that has been spilled be ineligible, disqualified from serving on a future board, is one of the possibilities. It's just one of the many. There are many variations that are thrown out in this document. But I wanted to walk through this table at the beginning, because before we get into the very many variations as to how this power might work or it might be exercised, it's useful to think about what's it for, what's the purpose of this. And the three straw men variations start by thinking of a different purpose for this board, a different conception of what this power's for and how it might be exercised, and then decides after that, well, then there is an alternative way that you construct it so as to achieve that outcome. So the first straw man and the original straw man essentially conceives of this power as being very much a last resort mechanism. It's the version that you're likely to prefer if you place a very high premium on organizational stability and consider that spilling the board is likely to be extremely disruptive and very dangerous. This is the version of the power that places the highest bar to even getting started at all. It says that before you try to invoke this power, you must have achieved a broad cross-community support for getting into this. And that's why it's got to be two SOs or two ACs or an SO and an AC. Now, think about what that actually means in practice. Because, you know, two of the ACs are never really going to be involved in that. The ESSAC and RSSAC don't think that it's their job to do that sort of thing. I think if you speak to them, they will ask not to be given this power. And otherwise, you're talking about very different communities. Know what kind of thing is the board like, or behavior is the board likely to be exhibiting, that would get both the GNSO and the numbers community, for example, to both want to spill the board? So you've got a very high threshold to even get into this process in the first straw man. So you might view the first straw man as being a replacement, not so much a new mechanism to hold the board accountable, but more something that replaces the current role, the informal role of the U.S. government at the moment. It replaces the ability to go back off to the U.S. government and say, we're not happy with ICANN at the moment. Can you step in and do something about this, please? You had an affirmation of commitment you got out of them last time. Could you do another one of those? You know, it's kind of replacing that kind of function. Now, Strawman 2, by setting a different threshold for how you start the process, creates a very different kind of result. You still got the same high threshold, the very same threshold, for actually spilling the board. But by setting a much lower threshold for starting the conversation, you don't have to have had a broad community view that we want to get rid of this board before you even start the process. That would mean that the discussion about whether or not to spill the board would happen within the community council rather than before you get there. And the consequence of that, therefore, is that the community council would then be at the venue whether it's community council or whatever the other mechanism is, statutory members, whatever. That mechanism would be the venue whereby a substantial element of the community that was not a consensus by any means within the community would have a venue to go to and make its case, to place its grievances before them and try and invite the rest of the community to agree with them that the board should be spilled. So it becomes, if you like, a forum for those grievances when a substantial element of the community believes that this is something that is serious enough to invoke spilling the board and wishes to invite the rest of the community to sign on. So that's Strawman 2. Strawman 3 takes a very different type of approach. Strawman 3 is based on the idea that the board serves several separate communities for different functions. It serves the CC community, the G community, naming community, the numbering community, and also the protocols community, actually. And it says, actually, spilling the board is not such a big deal. Yes, of course, we'd have to put mechanisms in place to ensure that the organization wasn't thrown out, but that can be done. But fundamentally, the board should hold the confidence of each of the communities to which it's serving. And if it doesn't hold the confidence of each of them, then none of the others should be able to impose a board on it, force it to remain with a board that community has lost confidence in. Yeah, so the fact that for example, the numbers community has no problem with the current board should not be a reason why, for example, the CC community should have to put up with continuing this board that they've lost confidence in. The CC community on its own should be able to get rid of it, and we can select a new board, and it's not a problem. We'll just get some new people. Yeah? And hopefully the numbers community will be happy with them too, for example. Yeah. So Straw Man 3 is based on the idea that the board must command the confidence of each of the communities which it serves, and any of the communities losing confidence should be able to eject the board and we'll just get a new board, we'll get some new people in. And so then we wouldn't need even, you know, a community council or all these other structures. You could just have a resolution within each of those SOs, within one of those SOs by its own rules, provided that it was on a unanimous basis. So, for example, the whole of the CCNSO Council, or the whole of GNSO Council, voted unanimously to discharge the board. They're gone. So those are the three straw men. But I encourage you to look at it not so much as the details of the structure that's put out, but by the purposes it serves, and therefore how the structure aims to deliver on that purpose. And then you can tweak things. So, for example, at the beginning, you know, on Straw Man 2, it says three constituencies within GNSO or three regions within GNSO. That's not really relevant. If you think that should be two or four or whatever, then so be it. That's not the issue. But firstly, I would invite people to think, what kind of power do we want? When would we want to use it? And under what realistic circumstances would these communities actually choose to want to use that sort of power? Thank you.
I guess what we should try to do is look at the three options, and maybe one or more than one of you are brave enough to say we should remove option 1, 2, 3. Yeah. So hopefully we can narrow down the options and then flesh out further the details of the remaining option. So I saw Malcolm spoke. I then have a queue with Tijani. After that is Erika. Alan and Chris, and then Rolf.
Thank you. For me, stealing the board is one of the most serious decisions we can make. Perhaps it is the most serious decision. That's why seeing in the standard that it is proposed that there is subjective standards disturbs me very, 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 I think that, and you are right, Jordan, when you said that stealing the board would be the result of losing confidence from the board. And I think that if the community lose confidence from the board, it is based on objective reasons. So that's why I say that objective standards disturb me. Second point, for the replacement. I don't think that an organization like ICANN may live without board. So we don't have to put any possibility to live one day without board. That's why I propose that before, in the same time when we are working on this, we also propose that in the future when we appoint members of the board, we appoint a member and a replacement, so an alternate one. So that it can be when if we decide to steer the board, the replacement board can be an interim board. But we have to have something. We don't have to have an empty chair. The third point to trigger, I think that, as several said, that this kind of decision, very serious decision, must engage the SOs and the ACs directly. They have to make the decision themselves, not their representatives, to do so. Thank you.
Yeah, Jordan is taking notes of everything that's being said, so nothing's going to be forgotten. But I think that the point on the backup board members might be somewhat controversial. Let's move to Ellen then. Erica. Erica was next.
Thank you. I do have some concern about the way we debate how the board can be sacked, and simply because of very legalistic reasons. I wonder if the board, assume the board is sacked, so you don't have a board there. Independent, just wait a second, where I'm heading for. And you already differentiated the CEO role in this. Now, I wonder how, from a purely legal point, this can be accepted under Californian law. When you look at the German structure, for example, and the German corporate structure, we typically have two boards. So the supervisory board, so if a board gets sacked, there is still, from a management point of view, then the supervisory board in place, which will fill the management functions, which are directed to the board. So in our case, we don't have this. We just have one board. So I wonder what kind of liability risk actually the organization will carry, because it can take quite long to get a new board. In our environment, it's not just something which happens very quickly, so it takes quite long. So there will be liability risk involved, and I wonder if you would either rather prefer to restructure the board structure, so maybe to have a two-tier system, or to at least investigate the liability functions risk the organization will carry.
Thank you. The problem with long speaker queues is the items you want to talk about get longer also. A couple of things. I'll try to be very brief. Chris had mentioned the issue of whether the ACs, SOs have to actually vote. I don't particularly mind if that vote is then conveyed through a member, but I think something as onerous as this has to have the, well, I'll use the term, the moral authority of the community itself acting, not the representative they named a year ago, but it has to actually, you know, be directly linked to the community itself in a transparent way, since we're trying to be accountable. In terms of the CEO, you know, taking the place of the board temporarily, I thought you had said something to that effect. The reason you're sacking the board may well be because they stood for a CEO who you believe was not acting well. So I wouldn't want to see. I think you would have to, in the same movement, have a caretaker board that is ready to step in, regardless of how we decide to constitute it. I think there has to be a board. Probably three people is the minimum. In terms of objective versus subjective rationale for replacing the board, I must disagree completely with Tijani. I do not believe you can have objective reasons. As soon as you do, they're subject to appeal. There's a huge, complex process. It's not likely to apply to the whole board. I think if you're unhappy, you're unhappy, and it's not something that you can have to be able to document and make sure it confirms the things. And in terms of bold moves that our co-chair asked for, I strongly object to scenario 3, that any ACSO can remove the whole board. That leaves us up to one AC and SO that's unhappy, it's only SOs that were listed. ACs didn't have that prerogative in the list. But nevertheless, completely disrupting the organization because they're not happy with the situation is not something I would want to counter about, have at all.
Thanks, Alan. Chris is next.
Thank you, Thomas. I was going to be brave like Alan as well. I dismiss Strawman 3 out of hand. I think it's a recipe for instability, not acceptable to me at all. I like Strawman 1 is fine. Strawman 2 is interesting. I liked Malcolm picked out a couple of points about it gives a voice to a smaller proportion of the community to be able to at least bring their problem to a table. I don't know how much detail you want to go into, guys, but for what it's worth, if we are to consider Straw Man 2, there is a significant amount of work to be done on that top line. Three constituencies within the GNSO effectively means that the industry side can't do it because there are only two of them. That's one point. Secondly, three regions within the CCNSO is basically a meaningless line to draw. It doesn't mean anything at all. And if you're going to try and find a way of doing it in the CCNSO, you need to find a different way. But all of those problems are not insurmountable. Perfectly easy to overcome those if we chose to go down that line. But my preference would be number one, and absolutely, positively, definitely not number three. Thanks.
If actually, Rodolf?
Just to prove that I can be as brave as Chris, I would like to get rid of three as well, and I wonder if we actually have to consider one or two if we can't merge them, because I fail to understand why who petitions is important. I think it's the voting that is decisive. So any constituency can start acting on the removal of the board, but in the end there is this group, you call it the community council, that has to vote on it. And I think that's the thing that really matters, how we design that. But who can petition? I mean, if I don't think that we are in this room the only people that think removing the board is a very serious matter. So if a particular constituency feels that this is necessary, of course they will start discussions with other constituencies first. I don't think we have to bring that in as an obligation at the beginning of the procedure, because they will know that in the end there will be a supermajority vote needed. So I would say get rid of two and three and forget about who petitions, and then we are left with one, a modified one.
Okay, that's modified one. Thank you, Roloff. I'd like to close the queue after Mathieu, because we would like to move to another topic. Jordan.
Thanks. This has been very helpful input. I think I'm not detecting any sort of broad opposition to being able to remove the board, which is good. I think it's good. There was a particular question that came up that I was going to just try and tease out, but it was about the... all of these issues about what you do if you do end up removing the board. I do think we will need to get legal advice, and there will be some options there on that particular question. So I've treated that as a kind of second-order implementation thing. And I'd just like to record my support for what Roloff just said in terms of, you know, given the high threshold there will be for actually deciding to do this, starting the discussion in this whatever forum we create, it might be better for it to happen there and thus have a low starting threshold than to try and make it so difficult to start that conversation happening that you need to keep the two SOs or two ACs that's already there. The final point is that I'd like to agree with Chris's suggestion that the decisions we made in the SOs and ACs seems sensible, and that was the point that Alan made as well. If it happens after a discussion of this institution, then that would also sort of reconcile the two processes together. So the votes were cast by the SOs and ACs, but that intra and inter-community dialogue would have happened as a matter of requirement. So that's all.
Thank you, and apologies for missing the first part of this. I was in a CWG-type meeting. I'm not a very brave person, but yeah, I would get rid of two and three immediately. And going further with my cowardice here, I think that I think that it's actually too easy to start the petition here. I think that if we're going to have any hope of a community council, and I'm not sure I agree with the fact of a permanently sitting community council either. I don't know that we've gotten that far, so I tend to see it more as something that comes out of the SOs and the ACs, and each SO and AC having a vote or some sort of notion like that, and that that adds up to it. A sitting community council is something that I still don't understand. That if there's any hope of this thing being reasonable or passing, most of the SOs and ACs should already be willing to talk about it. And it should be far enough along that there is a general hubbub of things are disastrous, we need to do something, and there should already be that general feeling. So getting multiple SOs, so I would like to see two SOs and one AC or two ACs and one SO, so that we make sure also that both sides of supporting organizations and ACs have a voice in it, but that it can't just be one and one. So I would actually like to see a 2-1 combo, that you have at least two of one and one of t'other. And then that's enough to get it initiated. Because if there isn't already a general feeling that this is something that should be done, it shouldn't be started. Because otherwise, if it's too easy to start, there's always going to be two groups that are irritated at the board and willing to talk about dumping them. I mean, that's just not that hard to get to. And that's part of it being, as I say, I'm a cowardly person, so I'll shut up soon.
But don't hold back,
So I agree very much that it needs to be a last resort. And I liked the idea when I talked to Tijani about there being some objective criteria. And I know it's difficult to define them, but I think the notion, you know, like I believe there are objective criteria, like there was an appeals panel decision that you ignored. Great. That's an easy objective criteria. And others. So I believe that objective criteria can be defined, and I think that, you know, going beyond the objective criteria does get hard because just not liking them. So without objective criteria, that's why I think the threshold for starting it has to be higher, because it can't be just that we're irritated with the board, because we always are.
Avery, I can't resist applauding you on a decent rant for being a coward. So I think we should be cautious not to get you really started. So Steve is next in line.
Steve Del Bianco, I'm really gratified that we're actually discussing how to do this and not whether to do it. I think that's a breakthrough. And the previous power was discussed with a similar level of consensus, so I'm very encouraged by the way it's going right now. There were two elements from the Sidley Austin letter to the CWG that I wanted to bring into the discussion. Now, this was in response to several questions, and Sidley Austin was apparently hired by the CWG. And they answered a couple of questions that are right on point here. The first was Sidley, not necessarily experts in California law, but they said that commonly, powers that are commonly given to members under California law include the removal of directors without cause, without cause. And so I support those who, I think Alan as well, who suggested this can't be something for which we have to delineate a standard for removal before the fact. This is a dramatic move, and it would be taken because of a loss of confidence, and that loss of confidence could be due to things we failed to anticipate in advance and write down. So I believe we need to stick with that. Now, I understand that's with regard to members and not necessarily a community council. Second point is that at the very end of that same Sidley letter, they address the CWG's questions about internal versus external and this notion of removing the IANA functions from ICANN if it's not performing them well. And Sidley is calling that the nuclear option, even though in the CCWG we've often called dumping the board our nuclear option. So we're going to need to probably stop using that terminology, right? But Sidley makes an interesting observation, and it echoes one I heard from Secretary Strickland. And it gets to this notion of removing the IANA functions from ICANN is one way to discipline ICANN to perform the IANA functions as you're supposed to. But another disciplinary move is to spill the board. And that is what Sidley wrote. They quote, the ultimate nuclear option if the board fails to take action is for the stakeholders to select other directors who are more in tune with stakeholders' views. So their belief, at least, is that that is a more less disruptive. As disruptive as we say it is, it could be less disruptive than pulling the IANA functions away from ICANN and putting them up for grabs somewhere else.
like to applaud this. I think that the Sidley letter, you should really read it. I think it's an excellent opportunity for our group to set the scene for the discussions of the CWG. And I think if we are doing a good job providing the mechanisms that Sidley alludes to, it will help the decision-making in the CWG on internal versus external a great deal. So I think this is something where we might even wish to say, okay, we're having this, there's agreement we want to have this, and that we might want to discuss the exact mechanics, you know, who can trigger the process, what's the voting threshold with CWG representatives to make sure that we're aligned on that one. Just food for thought, you know, we have a little bit of overlap with them, so there's opportunity for that discussion, definitely. I had closed the queue after Mathieu. I'd still like to hear Sebastian. So after Sebastian, I'm definitely cutting this off because we need to move on. So Mathieu, Avery is next.
No, Avery.
Have I scrolled?
No, it's okay. Avery's hand is old.
The hand is old?
Yes.
So it's your turn now.
If you want me to be before Mathieu, like that,
contest. It's a regular participant input. So Mathieu is speaking. Number of points have been made earlier, so I won't repeat them, and I'm very much in support of what's been said by many. I'd just like to go back to the issue of the level of petition and why it matters, because I actually think it matters. And putting Strowman 3 aside, I think it's best to have a threshold of petition introducing the motion of non-confidence that is relatively high, but not too high, but relatively high, because a motion of non-confidence is very, very disruptive already in the day-to-day business, because a normal board member confronted with the petition for non-confidence will stop everything and starts lobbying for keeping his job, or at least demonstrating that it's acting in the interest of the best of the community. And so I would defer from I think it was Roloff that it's indifferent whether we have a high level of petition or not, and would probably move to the I think it's Roman 2, which has a higher level of input or maybe tweaking it, but. We want to ensure the board is not disrupted too often by petitions such as this, and we also need to be taking into account the extreme perception that it gives when a vote of non-confidence is just triggered from the outside world. That is a very, very strong signal. In France recently, we had a vote of non-confidence at a parliament. Well, it's clear that's a signal of crisis. And so it has to be a high level of threshold to avoid the impression that ICANN is constantly in crisis mode. So that would be my argument on this. Thank you.
Sebastian.
Thank you very much. I agree with a lot of things who were said, but I would like to see if we can't do something outside of the current organization, like ESO and AC, but take, for example, if two regions with people from all the ESO and AC from the region want to petition, why it couldn't be also taken into account? It's maybe it's a bad image, but the African region and Latin American region was so unhappy with the new GTLD program that they want to dismiss the board because they have no enough candidate in this, and things were not going well. Then they may come together and say, we need to have a new board to restart something. It's just a suggestion to put in your work, but I agree with you. We can add that to the Strowman ones without changing everything else. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sebastian. I think that point is well noted, and I'm sure that Jordan and his team will explore this option. Now, what I sense is that we can drop number 3. Any objection to dropping number 3? No objection. I think it's likely going to be a merger of number one and number two. I think I saw a lot of nodding for Mathieu's suggestion with a high threshold for a competition of or position on non-confidence. So you're puzzled, Alan.
I'm not puzzled. I'm trying to understand how, if under one we need two SOs, why a small fraction of an SO is sufficient under two. It doesn't make sense to me.
Let's move away from the table. I guess what I'm hearing is that we want to have a high threshold for the petition, and at the same time we want a high voting threshold for the spelling itself. Right? Higher, even higher. Right?
Yeah, you can't do it the other way around.
And since if you look at the last line, the last two lines, you have the low bar, high bar thing. That was what I was picking up on, not the exact figures. But I guess that's direction from the group, unless you object. We will have a look into the objective versus subjective criteria, although I think there was more support for not introducing the objective ones, but just leaving it with the subjective ones. But having said that, even if you don't make a predetermination of the requirement for the rationale to having been objective, it can still be objective, right? So nothing prevents us from spilling the board on the basis of objective criteria. So I guess that's good. Right, I think we're making good progress on that one. I promised you that we would talk about the composition of the community a little bit, but before we do so, for this power, as well as for the last power, we saw an awful lot of support. You know, people immediately said we need this and we need to make sure that we get this done right. But with the first one on the budget veto or budget approval, the group, I think, was struggling.
You're hungry.
No, I'm not talking about the last bit where we had difficulties in trying to find the right understanding on the poll. But my question to you is, you know, we heard about the iterative process with the budget approval between the community and the board. Then we're now talking about spilling the board. We're talking about strategic plan and stuff like that. So do we need the community power to approve budget? Do you want to keep it?
Yes.
Or the veto process, do you want to keep it?
Yes.
Any objections to that? Because sometimes it's like you know, if a group is...
Yes, thank
you. Okay. I do. When I married my wife, I took yes for an answer.
And
Chris,
look, I'm in favour of it, provided we're very clear what we're talking about. I can see huge logistical challenges if you set it up as a yearly thing after the board has already approved the budget. It gets very complicated. If what we're talking about, if we get to the essence of it, if the essence of it is that the community, in whatever format we agree, should have the right to effectively send the budget back to the board, veto the budget and say, in its current format, it's not acceptable to us. I'm fine with that. When we do it is really challenging from a timing point of view. I would encourage us to be a bit more flexible about, you know, doing it early rather than late. In other words, you don't have to wait for the board to have actually made a decision. If you build it into the bylaws, you can say there is a community consultation process of a community working group, whatever you want to call it, that must be done before the board finalizes it. And if you really want to do it every year, fine, you could have it triggered by a mechanism instead of doing it every year. There are ways of doing it. It's a bit more, it's just complicated from a logistical point of view.
Okay, so we're going to keep it? Avery wanted to speak? Another rant?
If you'd like. Okay, it was a really quick, startling jump to go back to that issue in the middle of resolving where we were on this one. I was not completely comfortable with the specificity of voting against the budget. And one of the things, I'm not sure why that belongs in Workstream 1, but that's a different issue.
I was very supportive of the notion of there being something like a community override or a community veto that could be used in various instances, perhaps the budget being one of them. I start to be very concerned about having lots and lots of issues with their own bit of binding mechanism, that it starts to become somewhat gothic and very confusing. So, you know, okay, so now we're coming up with, we're going to do this for budgets, and we're going to do this for other decisions and that for other. So while the budget was an example of how you might use a community veto slash override, I hate the word veto because it's usually held by one person, but a community veto, as it were, as a general mechanism and how it would be applied to budgets, I'm comfortable with. But the notion that we're going to say we're creating a mechanism for overriding budgets and then we're going to create a mechanism for the next thing, that one has me nervous. Thanks.
Okay, so I have a queue forming. It's Sebastian, Alan, and then Jordan.
Process points that relates to the work that Working Party One has done, which is that it hasn't anywhere proposed a general power to say no to things. It's been very specific in the ones that it's suggested in terms of budget, business plan, strategic plan, bylaws changes, and so on. What you've just said now is the first time I've seen someone propose some kind of general power.
Let me correct myself. It was a mechanism that was generally applicable to several things. It wasn't the creation of four new mechanisms. There was a single mechanism that was applied to several things. And then yesterday in the meeting, though, people did talk about, well, should it only be applied to a couple specific things, or should it actually be opened up in general? So I'm not the first one to come up with that idea. Thanks.
The community empowerment outcome of the Frankfurt meeting was that this was applying to a strictly limited number of decisions, which we were listing as approval of the bylaws and budget and strategy, etc. And so there was not in this Frankfurt outcome a provision for Work Party 1 to work on a generic mechanism that would enable the community to override any board decision, but only a strictly limited number of decisions. Hopefully will all merge into one single mechanism in the end. And that's certainly but the question that Jordan raised was, you seem to imply there would be a need for a community power through whatever mechanism to override any board decision, and that was, I think, what triggered the reaction by Jordan, because it was a new element.
Avery speaking again. First of all, that, as I say, that came up in yesterday's meeting and wasn't even my idea at the time, was that did we want to limit that community veto mechanism to only a specified set of things, or did we want to open it up to a broader set of things? I'm not making a recommendation on that. What I'm recommending is that there be only one such mechanism and that there be a list of things that it can be applied to, however deep that list goes.
Just in terms of approach, we have these different templates for the different powers because we wanted the group to think through each and every aspect of the individual powers and not just have one solution and try to put everything into this one solution, right? But the hope was that after going through this exercise, we would merge all that into the lowest possible number of mechanisms required. So I think your point, Avery, is well taken and supported. We have Sebastian and then Alan.
Yeah, I really think that about the budget process, it's so constrained today and even difficult to follow, to have the inputs of the community, to have the staff preparing the budget, that I think it's not the best tool to be used by the community. and I would like to suggest that we concentrate in some issue, and the two last proposals are so important that maybe we need to have less things to do and to concentrate on important things. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Alan?
Thank you very much. I think budget is exceedingly important, and I'll point out that we have a good process today to a large extent, but that's not mandated anywhere. It could change virtually immediately. And the largest impact or import of these veto the budget, get rid of the board, is the threat that it's there, hopefully will make it not necessary to do it. And I think it's really important to remember that. And in terms of mechanisms, I think we want as few mechanisms as possible. There may be some variations that are built in or some little side excursions that you have to go through depending on the details, because the benefits of one size fits all is not nearly as large as making sure that we're taking appropriate action. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to speak in favor of keeping the budget strategy approval part of the powers we're giving to the community in Workstream 1, because it is the strategy and budget and allocation of resources is one way for ICANN to go into outside of its mission, and that is something that I think the community should be empowered to check if that happened, and that's really, to me, it's an important aspect of our system, and that's demonstrated through the stress tests, and I think a number of them show that we are currently relying on the approval of budget and strategy to say that our set of proposed measure would be adequate. So my impression is that if we step back and put it into Workstream 2 or further discussions, we might expose ourselves to more contingencies in terms of mission creep, which does not only happen through change of the bylaws, but also additional strategic initiatives that would be felt to be out of touch with the community expectations. Thank you.
Chris?
Thanks. I agree with Mathieu and Alan. If I could suggest a way forward, it might be that Jordan's group, instead of just working on the mechanism for vetoing, actually goes back a couple of steps and works on the mechanism the way, as Alan has said, that it could, the current way it's dealt with could be changed ad hoc. So why not actually put a process in place, Jordan, as part of this template that isn't just the veto mechanism, but is actually a community consultation mechanism that would then become part of the mandated processes that have to be used, and include in that the possibility of the veto. In other words, I'm suggesting you widen it slightly so that instead of just dealing with the veto, you also deal with the process leading up to that and make sure that there's sufficient community involvement. And that would give you an option then to work on the within the timelines that we've got in real life for getting the budget approved and possibly make that workable.
Thanks, Chris.
That raises an important question of principle, which is, should we do that for all of these? How far should we go in trying to improve ICANN? Is it this one, the specific issue to do with the very tight timing around budgets? Is that why you're proposing
one? It's partly that. It's partly Alan's point that the process could, I agree with Alan. It's a very important thing. I agree with Mathieu. It's a very important thing. I'm perfectly happy for this working group just to work on the veto thing. That's fine. All I'm saying is it's got to be realistically, logistically possible for it to work. Otherwise, it's going to create huge problems. So all I'm saying is I encourage us to kind of get the timeline, work out exactly what it is we need, and slot it into the right place, and not be as concerned. Look at slightly tweaking the process in order to make it fit the timeline, because you can't tweak the timeline. So that's all I'm really saying.
I think we have to do a kind of workability and sense sensibleness filter on all of these, and that's a helpful guidance for how to do that with this one. So thanks.
But I saw a lot of nodding for that approach to just add some language. I think we need to consider it carefully, not to give rise to the idea that we don't want to see consultation in other areas. I mean, it should be the case for everything. So we can put it in as a gentle reminder, maybe. So I have Alan, Steve, and Sebastian, and then I'd like to close the queue on that one.
Thank you. I don't really support putting a process leading up to the budget. It's just too easy to document a process which becomes a sham process, which is simply people talking at staff and them not listening. So you can't really make it work. It's got to have a will. And so I'm not sure it's worth the words to put that in. One idea we haven't discussed, and I really don't think we should discuss it, but people should maybe think about it, is the concept of an expense line item veto. In other words, we approve the budget in general, but you can't go in that direction and do that. That doesn't stop the budget from being implemented. It just says the money can't be spent like that. Something to think about.
A good point, and Jordan is taking note of that. Sebastian? Steve, you were first.
Steve Del Bianco, I do believe that this block mechanism or veto has the design characteristic that it does not interrupt and delay processes. If the community is anticipating the need to block a budget, that conversation will begin long before the board votes on the budget. It would have begun in this year, it would have begun in the last couple of weeks, starting last week when the budget was published for public comment period. So we will have had time as a community to decide if we wanted to start mustering the votes for the extraordinary move of blocking a budget. That is no delay whatsoever in the process that is being used right now at ICANN. You see what I'm saying? We are not delaying it. So I believe that these powers to block a bylaw, block a budget, are ones that the onus is on us to pay attention and move quickly. It does not slow down any process at all. And therefore, these are the kind of powers that need to be in work stream one. And they're relatively simple to articulate. Work stream two is where we put aspirational moves to improve the consultation process on budgeting so that you wouldn't need to do a veto. And I understand that. But those processes, put them in work stream two, so that we have a better opportunity to get our job done with a handful of crisp, dramatic community powers that we've thought through well enough that we have a plan to present to the community. I just believe that the extra time it will take to articulate these cooperative processes on bylaws, these cooperative discussions on budget, it just detracts from the work stream one load that we have on our hands right now.
Thanks. Sebastian?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I feel important to say that in matter of transparency, when I was board member, I was a member of the board finance committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Now, I think we have a good impression on what needs to be done. Clearly delineating what's required in Workstream 1 and Workstream 2, as Steve said, is a good idea. This line item veto, I think, got a lot of nods, so that's worth further consideration. At the end of the session, before we broke for coffee, we had this confusing poll type thing, but my impression is that the group was in favor of the following principles. We would not ask for directed votes, but we would give discretion to the groups to do that should they wish to, according to their own principles. So if a certain group wants to have a delegate, let's call them that way, on that community council and let them vote their conscience, that's okay. If they want to direct them, that's fine as well. So they can do it as they wish, but we would not mandate directed votes, right? Is there any objection to that? Tijani.
You're talking about for budget, right?
Are you speaking about the budget only, yeah?
Only about the
okay.
budget. I just wanted to recap what I thought in all this confusion seemed to be common sense. So let's then move to the community power, and I'd like to... Okay, is there any power missing? That's a mechanism, the community veto. So we get to the mechanisms. Okay, maybe that's a definition thing.
Is a mechanism or a power?
Can you look at the question?
You mean the thing that we've called a community veto is just a mechanism? That's all it is. The IRP is the next subject for us to go on to that Becky will be presenting, I think, along with incorporation of the AOC and the bylaws.
Talk about the community. So before we go to the IRP that you're all eagerly waiting for, did you want to say something? Okay, my computer switched off, so
sorry.
Please go ahead.
When it's the only hand, it's hard to believe it's a new one, I know.
No, my screen was dark.
I think you were asking, are there any other community powers? We said we could...
Don't touch it.
Thank you. We said we can defer to Workstream 2 things we don't really need for the transition as long as we have the powers to make sure we can get them later. I'm not sure how examples such as an ACSO removing their board member is something that we know we can get based on the ones we have now. Convince me and I'm willing to shut up. But there's a number of powers we said we want ultimately, and I'm not sure how we can be sure that we could get them. That one may not be the most onerous one. It's an easy one to remember. But I'm just not sure how the powers we have right now, you know, there's a lot of things we want, but we're probably not willing to spill the whole board to get. So I'm just not 100% sure where we want to be.
We have a power listed that is making sure that in the combination of things we've done on Workstream 1, we can do Workstream 2. And it's kind of a subsequent piece of work to this meeting. And if it's clear that there is no way to achieve that, then we need to put it back in the Workstream 1 box. So all I can say is that that's something that collectively as a CCWG we do need to be cognizant of. And I was just thinking, I wrote it down maybe 10 minutes ago, that we need a table again that shows these things, all of our work items across all three, the stress tests and so on, what's Workstream 1 and what's Workstream 2, because as a CCWG, we haven't actually decided that as yet, and we will need to. So I presume that's on the agenda for tomorrow.
Would you like to recap? Shall we do the community question first?
Maybe I can just try and recap. And recap, sorry, this is Machiavelli speaking. On the various powers, I think there are common points that should enable us to lead to some form of unity in the mechanism. They're all override type of decisions, all of them, the budget, the bylaws. We've been discussing this, and it's override type of decisions.
Except for
golden bylaw, we haven't fully discussed yet, but at least so far it's only override. The standing of reviews, we've always been on the side of no cause or no specific standard, sometimes for legal reasons or otherwise for global reasons. So that's a common ground. All of them need to take into account the continuity impact, the caretaker for the board, what happens for the budget, and so on and so forth. So that's something that is common to all those various inputs, except for the bylaw change, obviously, where the continuity is easier, probably. There's voting involved. Probably has to be transparent. We've said we want to, that's accountability of the accountability mechanism, by the way. And we still need to work on the supermajority, quorum, how we manage absentees, abstentions, that needs to be investigated. That's for all of them. And we said there was no requirement that the votes would be directed by the SOACs, but it could be left to the various instances, especially for the board dismissal, where there were some specific requirements in the room that this be taken into account. So that, I think, puts things in a position that we should be able to work on reducing the number of mechanisms to probably one with special systems, maybe two levels of thresholds for special decisions, but avoid a two-third threshold for power A and a three-quarter for power B and then four-fifths for power C and so on and so forth. We should be able to simplify the whole thing to something that is manageable and can be grasped by a reasonable human mind without being too much of a lawyer or an engineer. So I think that's very promising, and that leads to the next questions about how we balance the whole thing.
Yes, and
Tijani.
Tijani, you wanted to speak, please.
Thank you. Mathieu, I agree with you except for one case. So I would say we may have one mechanism with different threshold, okay, but for the board stealing, it is a different mechanism. It's not the community entity or anything. It is the SOs and ACs themselves directly deciding on. Thank you.
I'm not sure whether that's your opinion or whether that's the opinion of the whole rule. Right? So I think we need to... No, I'm not... No, I think that's something we need to check. We want to check that.
Any objections?
So this part you're doing.
Any objections or serious doubts to this option where there would be a community mechanism plus a board spilling specific mechanism? And I see Rulof's hand is up.
Rulof, thank you, Mathieu. Yeah, my doubts are so strong that I have to call it an objection. I think we will, although I understand the reasoning behind it, I think we will overcomplicate matters because then we have these two parallel tracks and we have to get different kind of, and I don't mean the mechanism, what we call mechanism, but procedures, etc. And it will only cost us a lot more time. So I'm very much in favor of doing one thing and do it very well so that we can use all the powers that we have with that particular mechanism.
Chris, and then I probably close because what that would mean would be we don't have consensus on that yet and we need to further work this out to see how it turns out. But Chris.
I think it depends on how you... Depends on how you say it. So in my view, as simply put as I can, I have no problem having one community group or whatever we're going to call it. That's fine. I have no problem with having different voting rules for the different processes. So for the board spill process, you could have a voting rule that said the representatives... There's a process by which the SOs and ACs vote and those representatives deliver those votes to the table. That's still one mechanism, still one process, but for the board spill, it is mandated by the SOs and ACs. Whereas for the budget, it could be what you suggested, I think, Mathieu, which is it's not mandated, it's up to... If the CCNSO wants to insist that its representatives on the Community Council vote the way it tells them to, they can. Alternatively, they can leave it to their conscience. So that seems to me to be a sensible way of dealing with it, but I'm very clear that board spill must be voted by the SOs and ACs, and then they can instruct their representatives to vote.
Is that something that you like as well?
Yes.
Chris is... Yeah. Well, then, is there any objection to Chris's proposal? I think that gets a lot of traction, right? So we put that on record, and we proceed on that basis. Now, let's talk a little bit about the community. What groups make the community? Who has a say? And how do we balance the powers inside the community? And you will have you will remember the email that I sent to the list the other day with a little tool that Barry produced, where you could play with, you know, different number of representatives and see what the outcome would be. And I'd really like to applaud Barry on, you know, Barry is just great. And, you know, I had a 5-minute call with him and he delivered exactly what I'd asked him. You know, that's awesome. What's that?
Say that again.
So I hope that you could play with that a little bit. That was merely to stimulate the discussion. So you should have the opportunity to test how the power play would work out if this and that group had this and that many people on this committee. And also you find a quite broad range of organizations in that table. And the question is, do we want to keep all those? Should they all have a say? So my question to you is twofold, and we should address them after the other. The first one is, which groups do we think should be represented on this community council? And after we've discussed that, we're not going to talk about specific numbers, but I think we need to get an idea of how the powers are balanced. We heard earlier that the ESSEC will likely not be interested in having a strong impact on this. So it might be a consensus view in this group that the ESSEC shouldn't have the same weight as does the CCNSO or the GNSO, right? So that's going to be the second part of the question. But with respect to the first part of the question, are there any views on who should be on this community council? And I would assume that there's common sense that all the SOs and ACs will be represented there. But I just opened this up. And I think that Malcolm is the first in the line.
Thank you. As I understand it, this community council is supposed to be the people to whom, or represent the people to whom the board is supposed to be accountable. The ACs are advisory bodies. They're not stakeholder communities. ALAC is, in my opinion, is misnamed. ALAC, in my opinion, is actually an SO. But there you go. ALAC clearly represents a community that is stakeholders. But ESSAC is not. ESSAC is an advisory committee. I would think that their view on really using any of these powers would be it's not for them to exercise these powers. Their job is to advise the board on the consequences of things that are in contemplation, no more than that. I'm less familiar with RSSAC, but I would guess that they might have a similar view. I would certainly think that we would be well advised to ask people who serve on ESSAC and RSSAC for their views on this matter before we jump to conclusions. And frankly, having dealt with ALAC, which, as I say, I think it is a stakeholder community to whom the ICANN needs to be accountable. There's a question of whether or not the GAC represents a stakeholder community to which it is accountable, or whether it is actually an purely advisory body, and what that means for the status of governments and the governance of ICANN. Of course, this is, I appreciate, a sensitive issue.
Rename the ALEC into ALSG and the GAC into GSG. Next in line is Alan. Alan.
Thank you. I'm not sure, just to follow on Malcolm, I'm not sure that ICANN is accountable to governments, but they should certainly be considering how their actions are viewed by governments, and whether that is an accountable or simply cares what they think, I'm not sure. Either way, I think that they have to participate in this process. In terms of the numbers, I don't much care what the numbers are. Certainly in the case of directed votes, mandated votes, they're all going to vote the same way. I can even contemplate different numbers per ACSO. For instance, the GNSO has routinely said we need seven people because we have seven different groups, each of which who think differently. And I don't much care as long as we get weighted votes and together they only have the same vote as the other groups. So I think we can allow ourselves to be quite flexible in this with, you know, deciding what the weight of each of the main ACSOs are, and then let them make a decision on whether they subdivide their votes or not based on their own internal mechanisms.
So you think that all the groups in the table should be on it? We need to scroll to the right-hand side because we're still with the first part of the question. You know, what are the groups that should be there?
Oh, okay, sorry. I was jumping the gun. I put my hand up before you asked that detailed question. No,
so
I,
we
I
have NRO, SSA, RRA. You know, I'd like to hear views on
all right.
Should they all be there, which I doubt, right? But I
don't believe the IETF should be there. The RSAC and SSAC, I think we need to talk to them. And since the SSAC people aren't at this table today, it's a somewhat awkward discussion. So I think we need some discussions, not each of us pronouncing what we believe the other people should be or be there or not be there. Unfortunately, if we haven't already had that discussion ahead of time to some extent, but I think we do need to have that discussion. I can give you my personal opinions, but I really think that they need to be based on fact, not my perception of what I think they do.
Well, a lot of what we're doing is by people sharing their personal thoughts with the whole group. Sebastian.
Thank you. In this list, you have to ISO is equal NRO, and we don't need to have two times. One is acting on behalf of the other. You can discuss which one on the behalf of the other, but it's the same. And I would like to separate not the name SO or AC, but the one who are really representing a community and the one who are selected at the end by the board. SSAC is not a community. At the end, the board selects a member of the SSAC. SSAC are really a community. There are 13 people who run the root servers and some others, but it's a small group, yes, but it's a community. I think IETF is not having any meetings, discussion within ICANN. There are a liaison to the ICANN board, but it's not because there are liaison into the ICANN board that we need to keep them here. That's for the list. Now, I just want to remind you some historical fact. It's that at the beginning of ICANN, the board was supposed to be half and half, 9 and 9, and 9 members would have been elected directly by the end user. Some people were very unhappy with the way the first election into place, and then it was replaced by the non-com, to be short and simplistic, and not anymore by end user directly. Now we have an at-large structure with a real structure representing the end user. Maybe it's time to come back to this threshold of having half doing the voice of the end user and the other half. Thank you. I know it's a provocation.
Thanks, Sebastian. That's very helpful, actually. Chris?
This is these are internal ICANN processes. Therefore, it's not appropriate for the RIRs or the IETF or anyone external to ICANN to, in that sense, to be involved. The SOs and the ACs are the groupings that should be involved. The ASO represents the numbers, the ITF is not represented and doesn't need to be. My view is that it is dangerous to start to parse the ACs and say, this AC is different from this AC, is different from this AC. What I would like to suggest we do is it should really be an opt-out. In other words, we should probably go to the HUSSEC and the ESSEC and ask them if they would like to be involved. They can have an option, of course, of being involved by having an observer or a liaison to these committees, or they can have involvement if they wish, if they choose to do so. So basically, the SOs, the ACs should all be represented, and there should be the opt-out for those ACs that may choose not to. Thanks.
Danny?
Thank you. I agree with Chris that we don't have to start. It's dangerous to start to say this must be there, this one happened to be there. I think that we are talking about the community, about the ICANN community, and the ICANN community is the internet community. And any member of this community has to be represented on this entity. I don't think that we have to categorize and say the ICANN should be accountable to this kind of community and not to this other kind of community. And I will say something which is not very good to hear, but I don't want to hear again that SOs are more important than ACs or anything like this. Everyone is important. Everyone. We are talking about community. We are not talking about anything else. So I want to try to be very positive and to say anyone from the community must be there. Thank you.
Question for inclusiveness of this community group. You know, and this is why we wanted to separate the power that the individual groups have from the overall composition. So even having a liaison or an observer status would be an inclusive approach, right? But I think we need to drill down on that one a little bit further. Next in line is Mathieu.
That's Mathieu speaking. That's actually a follow-up on this. Remember when we discussed about stakeholders, we had this long list, and we said basically ICANN is accountable to all of these stakeholders, maybe in different manners, and that does not mean the accountability expectation is the same for everyone, but there's some form of accountability of ICANN to any stakeholders. And I think it's perfectly understandable what Chris said, that considering that this strictly enumerated list of powers is very focused onto ICANN's internal processes, or bylaws, or the board, that it can be understood from the outside of ICANN that this group, or at least this member list or whatever it is composed exclusively of representatives from within ICANN. But that means that in another part of our work, we need to make sure we are enabling outsiders, people outside the ICANN community, to have their voices heard. I'm looking at Becky for the independent panel, obviously. But I think that's something we need to be very careful about, that by designing the community with an inward-looking SOAC structure, whatever it is, we are reinforcing the need to provide external stakeholders with a way to appeal to appeal, and that's going to be very, very closely looked at from outside of our group. So I just wanted to stress that out, and I also would like to echo one of the points that was made earlier, and that we need to take into account the government perspective in this group, one way or another. Otherwise, it's never going to pass the cut. Thank you.
So I would like to apologize to the whole group, since this is such an interesting discussion. I forgot that we were due for coffee like 15 minutes ago. So we will keep the keep the queue, but I suggest we break for coffee immediately for half an hour. Please use this opportunity to discuss this further, and we will then wrap up this item and move to the independent review.
So we're just
wrapping up this discussion.